is Mike Malloy here. Right before showtime, I got a memo from MSNBC telling me that they're not going to renew my contract. Oh, wait. No, that's not true. This hour is sponsored by Rick Gardner. He has a message. What is past is prologue. He writes that every crossroads on the path that leads to the future, tradition has placed 10,000 men to guard the past. Maurice Maeterlinck said that. Thanks to Mike and Kathy for all they do to keep me sane. Thank you, Rick. Appreciate the sponsorship. This hour, Rick Gardner. Well, tomorrow's a big night, huh? Prom night in the U.S. Congress. Ooh! Let's not have the boys on one side and the girls on the other. Come on now. I mean, like, let's pair up and have dates. Come on. That's what we're here for. Yeah, the certain members of the House and Senate are going to, oh, Jesus, God. And this is a 230-year-old democracy? No, it's not. It's the ass end of something, an experiment. A bunch of guys that wore wigs put together several generations ago. And tonight it reaches its nadir. Tomorrow night, where the boys and girls will all sit together, the D's and the R's. Jesus, God. Oh, will it never stop? And who is this? The crazy woman from Wisconsin, Michelle Bachmann? You know, Sarah Palin is, I'm sorry, Minnesota. Sarah Palin is weirdly entertaining. Michelle Bachmann is just dangerously weird. You know what I'm saying? I mean, when Michelle looks into the camera and talks about all that weird stuff she talks about, I mean, her eyes are vacant. There's no light on in there. I don't know. It's the damnedest thing to look at somebody with no light in their eyes. I've seen that before, but it's always been in a funeral home. You know, somebody who's dead. But there she is, Michelle Bachmann. She's going to be giving the part of the rebuttal. But they have a boy-girl in that one too, right? They have two people going to get. Oh my God, Michelle Bachmann. This should be. This should make Bizarro Night really bizarre. But the president is going to give his State of the Union tomorrow night, which really has become like homecoming back in high school. Do you remember that? Usually homecoming, though, was around Thanksgiving. At least it was in my high school. But this is like homecoming, the homecoming prom. Everybody's coming back from, places, vacations and went here, went there, and visited the family, and everybody's coming back now. Got to get back into the business of the corporations. They had their time off. How's everything going? Hi, how are you? Did you go? Oh, yeah. So, the school council, student council president gets to speak tomorrow night. And they have a new secretary treasurer who will be sitting behind the student council president, new secretary treasurer, John Boner, odd last name, but that's I don't know. And to the that would be over the president. You're looking at the TV screen, be over the president's right shoulder, or the president's left shoulder. If you're looking at the screen, will be, I don't know. He's a strange man. I've seen him before. I don't know. I think he works here in the school as the head janitor, I think. I'm not sure. But the faculty will all be sitting out there. But the student body is the important thing. The student body that Student Council President Barack Obama will be addressing tomorrow night. It should be really, really nice. Because it's the first time in a long time that the boys and girls have sat together, so many times in the past, it's been, the boys over here and the girls over there, and this time they're going to actually try to sit together, and it should be very nice. I can't wait. I really can't. Got an email from Kay here. Mike, I was listening to Green 960 on the way home. and heard a caller exclaim, way home today, I guess, and heard a caller exclaim, where's my president? What have you done with him? The context of the conversation was the merger between Comcast and NBC. And this woman, caller, was lamenting, quote, Obama's completely changed, or maybe he wasn't a progressive in the first place, end quote. While I disagree with the caller that he has completely changed, I do think he went into office as a conservative Democrat. Over the past 2 years, he has turned into Republican light. And on many issues, we can leave off the light. Anyway, this is the first time I had heard someone on a show other than yours giving voice to the notion that A, Obama has moved to the right since he's been in office, and B, he's never liberal in the first place. Are people on the so-called left starting to wake up? Okay. No, people on the left are not starting to wake up at all. What they're deciding to do is hold conferences and meetings and stuff like that. March 19th might be a wake-up. Big demonstration planned for D.C. I am making plans now to go. Tom Hartman Studios are in D.C., I think, so maybe I can sleep on his couch or something. Our military affairs correspondent, that was our education affairs correspondent, Kate Petrini. Our military affairs correspondent, Sharon, sent this to me. It's from Raw Story. Forget about closing Guantanamo Bay. President Barack Obama has reportedly green-lighted a plan to begin charges against new detainees at the controversial offshore prison for the first time under his administration. According to the New York Times, quote, the Obama administration is preparing to increase the use of military commissions to prosecute Guantanamo detainees, an acknowledgment that the prison in Cuba remains open for business after Congress imposed steep new impediments to closing the facility, end quote. So there you go. Obama administration officials, not for attribution, told the newspaper they were preparing military tribunal trials for several suspected terrorists at the prison, signaling a major policy shift for Obama in the face of high pressure from congressional Republicans and numerous Democrats. Our president, there he goes, fold. Mr. President, I'll see your $5 and raise you a nickel. I fold. Never mind, I'm out. I only raise you a nickel. I'm out. The ban soon will be officially lifted by Defense Secretary Robert Gates. Remember, how long ago was it? Oh, my God, it was forever ago when candidate Obama promised to close Guantanamo, arguing that it had become a worldwide symbol of the United States gone morally awry. He appeared to be making good on his pledge when he ordered the detention facility shut during his first week in office and explicitly banned its use from more suspects. But Obama's plan stalled. Several months into office, Obama accepted the use of military tribunals, and now it appears the administration has accepted the use of Guantanamo. Oh, my goodness. Well, so, yes, as Kay points out, perhaps, maybe, possibly, could be, might, I don't know, you think, maybe, perhaps, Democrats are starting to realize that Barack Obama is not what everyone hoped he would be, and it is time, seriously, if you are a Democrat, if you are a progressive, if you are a liberal, please disconnect yourself from the Barack Obama starship. You have to, if you're serious. Disconnect. Start locally organizing. Start planning lawful acts of civil disobedience. We'll be back in a moment.
campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
And again, this hour sponsor, Rick Gardner. His message, what is pastor's prologue, at every crossroads in the path that leads to the future, tradition has placed 10,000 men to guard the pass. Maurice Measurelink. Thanks to Mike and Kathy for all they do to keep me sane. Thank you, Rick. Thanks to Obama. Some ideas or some proofs that Mr. President Obama is a fraud where it concerns anything progressive or liberal left. Cheryl sends us in. Mike, you have the smartest, funniest callers in talk radio. Oh, Michael from Roswell, New Mexico is correct. Obama is a fraud for the following reasons. One, he did not restore habeas corpus. Two, he did not stop warrantless wiretapping of U.S. citizens. Three, he did not stop the trapping, so-called, of emails and phone conversations of U.S. citizens. Four, he did not fight for single-payer health care or even a public option. He negotiated secretly with the insurance companies. By his actions regarding health care reform, he totally disrespected Ted Kennedy, who supported him probably based on the premise that Obama would try to fulfill Kennedy's dream of single-payer health care. Five, he brought in Geithner, Sumners, etc., instead of Krugman, Stiglitz, Robert Reich, etc. Six, he has not replaced the Bush appointees in the Justice Department, including the ones who are responsible for the railroading of Don Siegelman, former governor of Alabama. Seven, he froze the salaries of federal employees in deference to the right wing. Eight, when he was senator, he voted for warrantless wiretapping of U.S. citizens. Nine, when Lieberman lost the Democratic primary in Connecticut, Obama went and campaigned for him against the Democratic candidate. These are just a very few of the reasons, Cheryl writes, he's a fraud. The prosecution of the previous administration would have been very difficult to accomplish and remain politically viable, but there must have been some way the lies and needless deaths could have been brought into the public arena. Obama only looks reasonable because he is following the Bush-Cheney cabal. There may be something wrong with me, Shaw writes, but Obama's rhetoric and his speeches do not inspire me or awe me. They are empty words. I get no sense of his heart being in sync with his words. I did cry when he gave his speech at Grant Park, not because of his words, but because a black man was going to be the president. Because I live in Oregon. By the time of our primaries, only Obama and Clinton were left on the ballot. I actually voted for Hillary. She is no more progressive than Obama. But at least she has balls. Two speeches that truly touched me were Jesse Jackson's at the Democratic Convention when he had run as a Rainbow Coalition candidate. Don't remember the year. And Al Sharpton's speech at the 2004, I think that date is correct, Democratic Convention. He had me standing up screaming and clapping. I never understood the over-the-top positive reaction to Obama's speech at that convention. I think that we as a country are so hungry for inspiration and someone to lead us out of the desert that we are and were grasping at straws with Mr. Obama. Where has he been the last 2 years? Why hasn't he been on television every week explaining to the country where the right wing has taken us and where they want to take us? Talking about progressive policies that will lift all boats. He's a coward, an empty suit. Sorry for this long rant. I get so stirred up listening to your program. Cheryl. Yeah, again, you know, no offense to Barack Obama. There's no reason to be offensive. He is what he is and ever shall be. And for anyone who truly believes that democratic socialism or progressivism or liberalism, take your pick, they're all about the same, that any of those concepts has any future in our political system, then you will not tie your dream or your work toward that end to the Obama administration in any way, shape, or form. You just won't do it. So what's left? The only thing that's left that I can think of is lawful, if it's still permitted, I think it's still permitted, acts of civil disobedience. Whether it, and you know, my idea of civil disobedience is just, you know, get 10 million people in the streets and sit down. I mean, you don't have to chain yourself to anything. You know, you really don't. You don't have to chain yourself. You don't have to drive stakes in the ground and, you know, tie yourself to the state. No. You don't have to do anything. Just pour out in the streets and make everything stop. Make the machine stop. March 19th in Lafayette Park across from the White House, I believe. I'll have more information as that develops. Will be a chance to participate in, I guess, a civil disobedience now, gathering to petition the government for redress of grievances. Isn't that disobedient under the USA Patriot Act? Don't know anymore. Stay with us.
For your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
So what do you think is going to happen tomorrow night? I've been looking at various places around the net and various publications. I think New York Times said something on Sunday about what the president should say tomorrow night. I love those pieces, what the president should say, as though the president of the United States is paying any attention to the people who are saying what you should say. Well, he is paying attention to people who are saying that, but they're not, you know, they're damn sure not liberals or Democrats or progressives or, you know, what have you. They are the corporate leaders who now own the country, pretty much. It's just, it hasn't quite been formalized, although I think the Supreme Court is close to doing that. They almost did it with Citizens United ruling, but... We are just so close to an historic moment that has been 230-some years in the process of developing. And oddly enough, Barack Obama was the person selected to make the transition from the shards and pieces left over from 230-some years struggling to become, excuse me, a representative democracy or democratic republic, from that struggle, since it was doomed to fail after the framers warned about the power in corporations all those years ago. It was doomed to fail because nobody paid any attention to that. As a matter of fact, the next 230-some years, ask Tom Harmon if you don't believe me, the next 230-some years were spent hardening the shell around corporations and weakening the protections around the Democratic Republic that was the United States, or at least the plan to be the United States. So Obama is presiding over this complete transition from whatever we were intended to be to what we have become. So here we are. And there's just simply no way to deny that. And there are two ways to react to it, though. What the corporatists are hoping the reaction will be passive, totally passive acceptance of all this, along the lines of, well, you can't fight City Hall, or, you know, I gave it a good shot, I'm too old to struggle, or, well, business knows what's best. Just keep in mind, businesses are not democratic. They're set up pretty much like China is right now. You have a board of directors or the ruling Politburo. You have a CEO, or in this case, Hu Jintao. And the decisions are made away from the public eye. The public has nothing to do with it. The public, the only function the public serves is to provide the labor and then buy the crap from the money that they make providing the labor. That's the function of the working class. In China, the function of the working class here, I'm not sure anymore, but corporatism running the United States of America means simply that it'll be run like a vertical dictatorship. Not with the stormtroopers. You know, every time you bring that up, you know, you talk about dictatorship. Oh, my God, here come the goose steppers. No. Absolutely not necessary, unless the proles get out of line. Then it becomes necessary to bring out the troops. But as long as the proles are willing to accept and quietly submit, no problem. Why should there be a problem? There's just no problem. But this handing off of power from those ghosts of 230 years ago, you know, the guys in the powdered wigs and the knee breeches and funny-looking shoes, the handing off of what they thought might be a good thing, not in their era, but might be a good thing down the road. Equal representation, all men created equal, endowed by their creator, yada, yada, yada. not in their time. I mean, they knew what they were doing. Look, guys. let's not get carried away here. Yeah, all men are created equal except the dark ones. And we mean men. We don't mean man in a generic sense. All men. I guess, should we put in white? Should we put in property? I don't know. Leave that out. That looks a little bit too funky. So from that, what they were talking about as maybe a good idea for future generations, not them, but for future generations, to where we are now, a corporatist takeover. And I think the framers realized that the only competition they would have would be corporations. Bingo. So tomorrow night, you know, I don't know if there's an official announcement to be made. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States of America is now the corporate states of America. I doubt it. So many of the states that make up the United States are on the verge of bankruptcy anyway. You don't want to start with, you know, bankrupt little political entities. You know, here in Georgia, I don't know, maybe another couple of weeks. Illinois is trying to stave it off with a tax increase. But anyway, tomorrow night's speech by Mr. Obama should be very, very interesting. According to the Washington Post, though, guess what? He's decided not to endorse that deficit commission. Remember the one Alan Simpson, and the guy from the Obama administration, the professorial looking dude. That deficit commission's recommendations to raise the retirement age and otherwise reduce Social Security benefits. Well, according to those in the know, Mr. Obama is not going to endorse that. And, of course, that gives the liberals something to cheer about. I mean, isn't that a mind meld of sorts? I don't know. I was going to say a mind, and then the second part begins with an F, but then I thought, no, you can't say that. The talk is thrown out there that Obama is going to do a couple of things where it concerns Social Security, none of which bodes well for the Social Security Trust Fund. And then at the last minute, right before the speech, word is put out by some of his propagandists, no, he's not going to do that. So everybody goes, woo, yeah, damn right,
Hey, Mr. President, we love you. Hey, you see, he's a liberal. See, he's a liberal. He's a progressive. See. See how easy it is. Over the weekend, according to the Washington Post, the White House informed Democratic lawmakers and advocates for seniors that Obama will emphasize the need to reduce record deficits in the speech, but that he will not call for reducing spending on Social Security as part of the effort. But he's already reduced the amount of money that is to be paid into it. Only for a year, Mike, only for a year. But what is that? It went from 6.4 to 4.2% or something. I don't know. The Social Security tax, FICA, it's been reduced. Well, if you are not funding something, or if you start to underfund it, isn't that the same thing as smashing it into a million pieces with hammers and bulldozers and getting out kerosene and dousing it and setting it on fire? I mean, it's like Barack Obama is following the diktat of the murderer on the Rupert Murdoch terrorist network, Glenn Beck. Have you got that thing handy? That thing about Glenn Beck, I haven't heard that since Friday, and I want to hear that again since I brought up his name. Go ahead.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing change the pose. You get the ends. You've been using them?
Yeah.
They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head.
Okay, never mind. That's enough. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. Washington Post says liberals who have been alarmed by Obama's recent shift to the center. To the center? What? To the center? Since when? I mean, since when you come into office and give de facto pardons to the previous 8 years of war crimes, since when is that called somebody who's not only not in the center to begin with, he's so goddamn far right, his last name might as well be Bush. I'm sorry. Excuse me. I didn't mean to. The Washington Post says liberals who have been alarmed by Obama's recent shift to the center and his efforts to court the nation's business community applauded the decision, arguing that Social Security cuts are neither necessary nor wise politically. See how easy it is? You just come up with something that makes no sense. Well, we may have to cut Social Security. And then at the last minute, just say, hey, I'm not going to cut Social Security. I'm not going to touch it. Woo, woo, woo. There's our big liberal president. Man, I like that. That's good. That's good. That's really good. Idea of MSNBC making a sharp turn to the right sunk in yet? The Sour, sponsored by Rick Gardner, whose message is, what is past is prologue. And he quotes Maurice Maeterlinck, at every crossroads on the path that leads to the future, tradition has placed 10,000 men to guard the past. Thanks to Mike and Kathy for all they do to keep me sane. Thank you, Rick, for the sponsorship. Prairie 2 wants me to know, sorry, Mike, under the USA Patriot Act, there is no lawful civil disobedience. I had suggested lawful civil disobedience. I guess disobedient now means illegal. He writes, anything that causes or incites economic disruption is terrorism. No charges, no trial, no disclosure, no release. If you're going to do lawful civil disobedience, don't tell anybody.
Ooh. Be a good time. That would be a good segue into his missive tonight from Prairie 2, In the Hole. I remember it used to be In the Mood. Now it's In the Hole. Wall Street markets were up today and everybody is feeling bullish. The Federal Reserve printed a fresh trillion. It's gotten things going. Commodities are up and the sky is the limit, so money is pouring in from your pension and 401k managers. Wave goodbye to it. You'll never see it again. Nothing about this market bubble. He's talking about the stock market. Is building the real economy, of course, but they will take credit for the natural uptick that you can expect after a recession has run this long. The improvements we are seeing will quickly evaporate as commodity prices rise. There's a pretty good chance we'll see $4 gas soon. And if the economy can handle it, you'll see $5 gas. No, it's not peak oil. That's not going to happen overnight. There's still plenty of oil, and the market should reflect that. But this is Wall Street manipulation. Keep in mind that the big oil companies don't pay market price for oil anyway. They have plenty of their own that they got cheap. If you think the high price of gas is good for the planet, guess again. Tanking the economy only makes it harder to get off fossil fuels. Expect food prices to far exceed the last bubble when millions died as food became priced out of reach. There will be massive rioting in countries where people pay half their income for food already. The further out of reach food becomes, the more the price goes up in a bubble economy as money-making opportunities abound. This also drives down supply, as it becomes difficult for third world farmers to afford to put in a crop. Less local supply, of course, drives the price up even higher. And this means there's even more money to make. Yeah, everybody wants to make a buck. You can't make a buck being a farmer. Jesus, God. Prairie 2 goes on. You can expect this bubble to grow fast and end quickly, almost certainly by September 2012. A 1,500-point Dow. I think he means a 15,000-point Dow. Should guarantee a Republican sweep when combined with unlimited corporate spending, thanks to the 5 Republicans on the Supreme Court. Remember Citizens United. There is talk of impeachment, as several of the justices haven't been reporting millions of dollars of income from right-wing sources on their disclosure forms over the years. We'll get to that in a minute. But Obama likes to move forward, and such crimes are by definition in the past. So don't expect anything to happen. The buzzword for Obama is now economic competitiveness. This has long been a right-wing buzz code for union busting. Competitiveness. Union busting. Maybe he's just using it as slogan and thinks he can ride the bubble through the election. There is simply no way to compete, quote-unquote, with China, India, Brazil, Vietnam, and on down the list. The idea of protecting our domestic economy like all the successful countries do is not even spoken of, except to wrongly blame the Great Depression and even the current one on such protectionism. Isn't it odd that the framers had that protectionism? Oh, never mind, I digress. Anyway, Prairie 2 says, the memory from 1790 to 1980 seems to not exist anymore. It's all gone down the memory hole. And the American dream? That's going right down behind it. PrairieNumeral2.com. Go to his website and tell him, you're crazy! Or that you agree with him. Whichever. Clarence Thomas. How about this guy? Uncle Clarence, Supreme Court Justice. He failed to report his wife's income. Virginia? Right? Virginia Thomas? Yee-hoo! Isn't she a piece of work? Huh? What's her company? Her group? Liberty Central. Liberty, that sounds like a phone exchange somewhere, doesn't it? Liberty Central. Anyway, she earned over $680,000 from conservative think tanks, mainly the Heritage Foundation, over the past 5 years, according to Common Cause. But Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas did not include it on financial disclosure forms. Well, why should he? He is a corporate-owned, ultra-right-wing Supreme Court Justice of the United States. He is immune. Report
almost $750,000 in income? Why? Between 2003 and 2007, Virginia Thomas, a longtime conservative activist, earned $686,589 from the Heritage Foundation, according to Common Cause review of the foundation's Internal Revenue Service records. Thomas failed to note the income in his Supreme Court financial disclosure forms for those years, instead checking a box labeled none, where spousal non-investment income would be disclosed. The lying son of a bitch on the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas, the man George Herbert Walker Bush declared to be the most qualified man in America to be a Supreme Court justice, is a liar. Ooh, more on this when we come back. Do stick around.
Residents of Arizona.
It is indeed, and this hour is sponsored by Valerie Schmidt, whose message is Mike on Friday, MSNBC, Comcast, silence Keith Olbermann. The fascist takeover of the media is almost complete. We truth seekers now need you even more. See you and Kathy on the Progressive Voices Cruise. Valerie Schmidt is our sponsor for this hour. Thanks, Valerie. Give you some information on Michelle Bachmann here in a minute. But right now we're kind of hung up on Supreme Court Justice Uncle Clarence Thomas, who lies on his financial disclosure forms. And why shouldn't he? Of course he should lie. I mean, he's a Supreme Court justice. Why tell the truth when it involves $678,000 that your wife made? Why tell the truth about it? If you tell the truth about it, you just have to pay taxes and you get into all that crap. A Supreme Court spokesperson, this is all according to the Washington Post, of course, or I'm sorry, LA Times, excuse me. Supreme Court spokesperson could not be reached for comment late Friday. Always happens on Friday, huh? But Virginia Thomas's employment by the Heritage Foundation was well known all the time. I mean, she worked there for how long? 5 years? What does she make? According to Clarence, nothing. According to Heritage Foundation's tax returns, almost $750,000. According to Uncle Clarence, nothing. Spousal non-investment income, none. That's what he checked. According to LA Times, Virginia Thompson also was an active in the group Liberty Central, an organization she founded to restore the, quote, founding principles. Ms. Thomas, are you insinuating that your husband is three-fifths of a human? That was a founding principle. Oh, my. In his 2009 disclosure, Uncle Clarence also reported spousal income as none. Common Cause contends that Liberty Central paid Virginia Thomas an unknown salary that year.
Well, it's nobody's business. God damn it, her husband's a Supreme Court justice and the most qualified man in America to be one.
Federal judges, you see, are bound by law to disclose the source of spousal income. Thomas's Uncle Clarence's omission. This is what it's being called by Stephen Gillers, a professor at NYU School of Law. Clarence Thomas's omission. That's not an omission. It's a goddamn lie. It's a bald-faced, upfront, in-your-mouth lie. It's a lie. It is not an omission. An omission is when you forget to put chicken fat in your noodle soup. That's an omission. This is a goddamn lie. Lie. Professor, excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm yelling. Oh, no. Thomas's omission, according to this law professor, and I like this, parenthetically, which could be interpreted as a violation of the law. Could be. It could be interpreted as a violation of the law. Let me see. What happens, truth seeker, if you somehow you make 10 grand this year from some source that you're not really sure if they're going to report it, so you don't put it on your income tax return? What happens to your income tax filing? What happens to you? Would someone say, well, that could be interpreted as a violation of the law? You see how this works for Uncle Clarence? And according to the professor at NYU School of Law, this could lead, it could be interpreted as a violation of law, it could lead to some form of penalty, something, I don't know what, let's see, go to Boardwalk, pay twice the rent listed. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Go straight to... No, it couldn't be go straight to jail. No. Could lead. It could be interpreted as violation of the law. What was your spouse's income? Nothing. But it was $700,000. No. Where'd you get that? Could be interpreted as violation of law that could lead to some form of penalty. The professor said, it wasn't a miscalculation. He simply omitted his wife's source of income for 6 years, which is a rather dramatic omission. It could not have been an oversight. Well, if it's not an oversight, Professor, what is it? If it's not an oversight, it's a deliberate falsification of a tax document, a disclosure form, as required by law, by a sitting United States Supreme. So what? Right? So what? Doesn't matter. So what? Stephen Lubet, an expert on judicial ethics at Northwestern. You try English. Stephen Lubet, an expert on judicial ethics at Northwestern University School of Law, said such an infraction, it's an infraction, could be a violation. Such an infraction, according to this professor, was unlikely to result in a penalty. Although unfamiliar with the complaint about Thomas's forms, Mr. Lubet said failure to disclose spousal income, quote, is not a crime of any sort. But there is a potential civil penalty for failing to follow the rules. He added, quote, I'm not aware of a single case of a judge being penalized simply for this. Simply for this. Spousal income? None! What about the $700,000? Shut up! I checked the little box that said none! Oh. A spokesman for the Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts, which oversees the financial disclosure forms, could not be reached Friday night to comment on what actions could be taken. In most cases, judges simply amend their forms when an error is discovered. An error? 5 years running? $750,000? Is that an error?
Is that an error?
Common Cause President Bob Edgar wrote in a letter to the Judicial Conference of the United States. I wonder what they're going to do. Quote, without disclosure, the public and litigants appearing before the court do not have adequate information to assess potential conflicts of interest. And disclosure is needed to promote the public's interest in open, honest, and accountable government. End quote.
That sounds so, I don't know. What does that sound like? Disclosure is needed to promote the public's interest in open, honest, and accountable government. Doesn't that make your eyeballs bleed? It gives me a headache and nausea. It really does. Disclosure is needed for what? To promote the public's interest in open, honest, and accountable government.
Open, honest, and accountable government. Anyway, the allegation about Uncle Clarence comes after Common Cause filed a letter requesting that the Justice Department investigate whether Justice Thomas and Antonin Scalia, what's Fat Tony been doing?
Hey!
Whether Uncle Clarence and Fat Tony should have disqualified themselves from hearing a campaign finance case after they reportedly attended a private meeting sponsored by Charles and David Koch, billionaire philanthropists who fund conservative causes. Why should they disqualify themselves? What in the hell is the LA Times and Common Cause suggesting? Jesus God! I mean, just because they're liars, just because they're criminals, just because they have no judicial ethics, what is your freaking problem? The hour. Now, a little bit there about Uncle Clarence. That was from Friday. Today, see, once you're called, by the way, this hour is sponsored by Valerie Schmidt. Don't want to forget that. And she sends a message. Mike, on Friday, MSNBC, Comcast, silence Keith Olbermann. The fascist takeover of the media is almost complete. Valerie Schmidt is our sponsor this hour. Anyway, Friday, Common Cause released its findings and the letter it sent to the Judicial Oversight Organization, whatever the hell it is. Some phony-ass organization, really doesn't care. Why are you bothering us? We don't, you know. Then today, from Common Cause, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas today released corrected financial disclosure forms after Common Cause on Friday revealed that he had repeatedly failed to disclose his wife's income on his annual financial disclosure forms. In a document stamped, quote, self-initiated amendment, end quote. Self-initiated amendment. Do you love it? Thomas wrote that the omissions were made as a result of a misunderstanding of the filing instructions. He misunderstood that little box that asked about spousal income, the one he checked none. Apparently that was too confusing for Uncle Clarence.
Well, I misunderstood the filing instructions.
Common Cause says it's an excuse they find difficult to believe. Common Cause President Bob Edgar said, quote, Justice Thomas sits on the highest court of the land, is called upon daily to understand and interpret the most complicated legal issues of the day and make decisions that affect millions. Therefore, it's hard to see how he could have misunderstood the simple directions of a federal disclosure form.
Check this box.
Oh, I'm all confused. What does that mean? Check. What does that mean? Does that mean I should write a check? What does that mean? This. Where? I don't see a box. I see a little square down on a piece of paper. There's no box there. Check this. Box? What box? It's too confusing. Too confusing. So Clarence said that he...
I had a misunderstanding of the filing instructions. Said check the box. What the hell does that mean? My clerks weren't here. Nobody could tell me. Check the box. Check the box. I have no idea what that... What language is that? Check the box.
Uncle Clarence, one last question here. What about the omission of all the money that your old lady got from Liberty Central? I mean, this $700,000 is from, you know, the Heritage Foundation. Uncle Clarence, wait a minute. What about the money your old lady got from Liberty Central? Any comment? Anything? Hello? Uncle Clarence! Well, Uncle Clarence has a document called a self-initiated amendment, and he said, well, the reason the omissions were made there around that 700 grand is the result of my misunderstanding the filing instructions. Check the box! What does that mean? God damn it, where's Scalia? Scalia! Help! These white bastards are getting pinning me down again. What does this mean? Check the box. What box? I don't see any box. There's a piece of paper here. Clarence Thomas failed to report his wife's income. A professor at NYU School of Law said that Thomas's omission, which could be interpreted as a violation of the law that says they have to disclose the source of spousal income. So if you don't check the box, that could be interpreted. It might, could, possibly, I don't know, maybe be interpreted as a violation of the law, and it could, perhaps. I mean, if you really push it, I mean, you know, could lead to some form of penalty, but Uncle Clarence explained it. The goddamn form was too confusing. Check the box.
Oh, check the box. Check the box. Please, somebody, what does that mean?
It's Mike Malloy.
5 before the hour. Michael writes, one more thing about Clarence Thomas. His wife also was working at the Heritage Foundation when she was drawing up a list of candidates for the anticipated Bush administration transition, while her husband was sitting in judgment of Bush v. Gore, something for which he should have recused himself, which is just one more question of partiality, which has been ignored over the years. I wonder if his disclosure form showed her income for the year 2000. No, when you finally find yourself, you know those dreams you have where, I haven't had one for a long time, years, but I used to have them. You're in any kind of a situation, and you're trying to move forward in the dream, away from something. Something you can see or something you know is back there. But it's something that's going to do you great and grievous bodily harm. So you're trying to get away from it, and you can barely move. You know those dreams where you just, one foot, and then you pull up the other foot. And then, and then the other foot comes, one more. You ever feel that way when you're awake? Isn't it starting to feel that way? Among those arrested by the FBI in its mass mob sting last week were Jack the Whack, Marbles, Skinny, Johnny Pizza, Junior Lollipops, Jimmy the Gooch, and Baby Fat Larry. No Fat Tony Scalia or Sammy the Fish Alito or Clarence, don't call me Uncle Thomas. Bachman. Is Michelle Bachman an intriguing character? What? She won her re-election with 52% of the vote in Minnesota. What? All of a sudden, the movie Fargo is starting to make sense to me. When I read that, when I found out that she got re-elected with 52% of the vote, it was like, well, slap me with a, what are those fish? Lutefish. Slap me with a lutefish. Starting to make sense. Oh, by the way, this hour is sponsored by Valerie Schmidt, who writes, on Friday, MSNBC Comcast silenced Keith Olbermann. The fascist takeover of the media is almost complete. Thank you, Valerie, our sponsor this hour. Bum, 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 bum. Tom Scheck, writing for Minnesota Public Radio back on Friday, kind of dips his toe in the water of the insanity and absolute unstoppable, unending lies of Michelle Bachman. Tom Scheck writes, U.S. Representative Michelle Bachman has everything a cable TV talk show producer wants. Attractive and outspoken, she's reliably controversial. But in some instances, there's the qualifier. But in some instances, Bachman is also wrong. And then Tom Scheck goes on to say, among the errant statements Bachman has made in the past few years was this one in November about President Obama's trip to India. We know that within just a day or so that the President of the United States is taking a trip to India that is expected to cost the taxpayers $200 million a day. That's an errant statement? Then what's a lie? I mean, what? In 2007, she said this about the Middle East. Iran is the troublemaker trying to tip over apple carts all over Baghdad right now because they want America to pull out. And you know why? It's because they've already decided that they're going to petition Iraq. When informed that that was nonsense, Bachman backed off, saying she was, I'm only speaking in general terms. Kind of like Uncle Clarence being confused about check the box, right, Michelle?
Where do they get these people? Jesus, God, is there a contest somewhere? Why isn't it packaged and put on television? You want to be a Supreme Court Justice? Here. Candidates, let's hear the stupidest thing you can say.
I don't know how to check the box.
That's good! God damn, that's good! You're going to be a representative from Minnesota? Yes. Okay, what's the stupidest thing you can say? President of the United States is going to India. It's going to cost $200 million a day. Oh, my God! You win! Woo! And then Tom Scheck. I don't know who'd be more pissed off here. Tom Scheck at Minnesota Public Radio. Well, I guess they got to rely on public funding, right? Huh? Because his next line, her misstatements aside, Bachman is a star. Misstatements. Errant statements. Really? You know, my grandmother would call that a goddamn lie. Well, she'd leave off the goddamn because she was a Christian fundamentalist. But she would take Mr. Scheck and Miss Bachman by the back of their necks and take a big old chunk of lava soap. Now, you got to be over, what, 60 to know what the hell lava soap is. All right, 50. You people don't know what... You know what you people know about? Dove. You know about Dove. Jesus Christ, my grandmother would have smeared Dove on a biscuit and eaten it. Lava soap was made out of the deepest bowels of hell. And if you lied, she'd wash your mouth out with it. I wish my grandmother would have known Michelle Bachman. And now Tom Scheck. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio. Misstatements? Bachman is a star? Oh, well, here it is. Scheck then says, Bachman also is a frequent guest on talk radio, including Minnesota Public Radio News, which is where this guy works, right? And travels the country speaking to Republican groups. Well, however, this is the way Scheck redeems himself. However, independent fact checkers find that the information she relies on is often exaggerated, misleading, or wrong. You're getting close, Tom. You're getting close. Another couple of years of Minnesota Public Radio and you'll be able to say, she's a liar! PolitiFact, Mr. Scheck writes, a Pulitzer Prize-winning feature of the St. Petersburg Times that checks whether statements made by politicians are true, has repeatedly determined that Bachman's claims don't ring true. Ring true? Ring true, ding dong. Dong ding. What does that mean, Tom? Ring true. She's a liar. PolitiFact editor Bill Adair said, quote, we have checked her 13 times, and 7 of those claims are false, and 6 have been found to be ridiculously false. Mr. Adair said, no politician has been checked as often as Bachman without saying at least something that's true. He went on to say, quote, I don't know anyone else that we have checked more than a couple of times that has never earned anything above a false. She is unusual in that regard. She has never gotten a rating higher than false. She's never even gotten a maybe or a possibly or could be or I don't know, let me think about it. Or goddamn, that's a head scratcher. No, none of it. Everything she's ever said is false. That means it's a lie. Come on, Tom Scheck at Minnesota Public Radio. I realize you're not out there like the St. Petersburg Times, but for God's sake, you're a journalist. Mr. Scheck goes on. Adair is careful to say that he expects to someday fact check a Bachman statement that turns out to be true. He said his organization selects statements that it thinks the public would be curious about. Oh, and PolitiFact has been tracking Bachman's statements since 2009.
Bachman usually recites claims that were initially made in blogs or in chain emails. You know, the kind that says, send this to 30 people or your ass will fall off. You know, and Bachman apparently believes that, oh, I don't want my ass to fall off. Oh. In a 9-minute interview with Bachman on Minnesota Public Radio News Morning Edition program earlier this month, Bachman made at least 4 misleading or false statements. That means out-and-out lies. I'll share those with you, courtesy of our writer from Minnesota Public Radio, Tom Scheck, when we come back. There's so many fascinating people in the Republican pantheon of half-wits and morons, whether they are Supreme Court justices or representatives or senators or Joe Lieberman. But Bachman is almost singularly entertaining. I mean, Palin is Palin, but you know, Palin is too full of herself. Bachman is just flat out... I don't know if Tinkerbell were to become a full size adult, I think Bachman would be that, you know, Tinkerbell. In a 9-minute interview with Bachman on Minnesota Public Radio's Morning Edition the other day, she suggested the new federal health care law is the main reason health insurance premiums have increased across the country. She said, here's the quote, I know a friend of mine. I hate it when people talk like that. Like, you know, I hate that too. I know a friend of mine. Well, of course you know a friend of yours, you moron. What kind of a sentence? I know a friend of mine who's from Minnesota. I know a friend of mine. Why not I know someone or a friend of mine from Minnesota? I know a friend of mine. I mean, that is junior high school, isn't it? I mean, my God, that's what 12 and 11-year-olds text to each other. I know a friend of mine, only they spell no, N-O. I know a friend of mine. Anyway, she goes, I know a friend of mine who's from Minnesota who has recently moved to California who is a young widow. She told me her premiums have gone up 29%. Now, when's the last time you talked to someone who said to you, oh, my God, my premiums went up by, and then said a percentage? When's the last time? Ever? No, never. You have never heard that, truth seeker. I don't care where you live. Nobody ever says to you, my insurance went up 84%, 18%. You know what people say? My insurance went up $12 a month. That's what people say. Bachman is a goddamn liar. Liar. And then she says, well, that makes sense because of all the unfunded mandates in Obamacare. Now the private insurance companies are picking them up. What? What? What does that mean? The vice president of the Kaiser Family Foundation, which studies healthcare issues, said, no. No. He said, there have been reports recently of insurers raising premiums, but that's due to the increase in the cost of health care, which is continuing to rise and the effects of the economic downturn. Bachman also claimed that illegal immigrants will have access to health insurance under the new law. That's a lie. It's a total lie. The emergency rooms are required to treat everyone, no matter what their immigration status is, but that's been the case for years. It has nothing to do with the new law, Michelle. And people who are in the country illegally are not eligible for health care under the federal Medicaid program or the new insurance exchanges the law creates. Two lies in one sentence. Actually, three. Oh, Michelle, check the box. Woo! Bachman also said in the interview that Christina Romer, the former chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisers, had warned that 5 million jobs would be lost under the new health care. PolitiFact and other organizations say Romer never said that. Ever. When Minnesota Public Radio asked Bachman to discuss the many challenges to her credibility. You're like, I love that sentence. Oh my God, I love that sentence. Challenges to her credibility. Way to go, Tom Scheck. I would have said, when NPR News asked Bachman why she was such a goddamn liar, the congresswoman dodged the question. Instead, she questioned the truthfulness of President Obama, saying he has misled the public about the federal stimulus and the health care law. Bachman said, President Obama gave us the opposite information. That's where the fact-checking needs to be held, because President Obama needs to be held accountable for not telling the American people about all the failures that have come along. And then she went on to repeat her earlier misstatements.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and Norm Ornstein, a congressional scholar with the American Enterprise Institute, said politicians have become increasingly dismissive of facts. He said, quote, respect for facts just doesn't mean a whole lot anymore. You don't get punished. You don't get shamed if you say things that are patently false. Let's face it, for many, repeating them over and over again, even after you've been told that it's been made clear what you say is false, that just doesn't have any impact at all.
And then Tom Scheck concludes by saying Bachman's misstatements.
No, Tom, her lies, for Christ's sake, try this. Just say it. Misstatements, that's three syllables. Try lies. It's one. It fits better. Bachman's lies! Haven't hurt her in her district. See how much better that feels? She was elected with more than 52% of the vote in November, and she raised a record amount of cash for her campaign from supporters both in Minnesota and around the country. Michelle Bachman. This hour was brought to you by Valerie Schmidt. Her message is the fascist takeover of the media is almost complete. Yes, Val, thank you for sponsoring the hour. We're going to take a break and come back and see who else we can bludgeon. Isn't this fun? Misspoke?
She misspoke.
She hedged. She obfuscated. She, why don't journalists just say it? Is there something in J school that says don't ever use the word lie unless you're referring to Saddam Hussein?
As you know, I think it was last week, Joe Lieberman, after consultations with Hadassah, I guess, Joe Lieberman decided that he would not run for the Senate anymore. Oh, Hadassah, I don't know. I'm just, Jesus, God, you know? What's my approval rating back in Connecticut? What's 6%? Ay. What am I going to do? Don't worry, honey. You'll wind up at Princeton. Glenn Greenwald writing at Salon about Lieberman and this phony-ass craziness of Democrats and Republicans, especially Democrats, you know, applauding his years of service to his country. You know, Lieberman is, or I'm sorry, Greenwald, you know, is like Matt Taibbi and maybe even like Chris Hedges, although Chris Hedges is just hung up on this religious stuff. But, you know, they're all really good writers, and it's just like they can't take it anymore. It's just madness out here. Calling Lieberman anything other than the dolt and the destroyer that he was is just madness. Greenwald said there's a bill introduced last year by Lieberman and McCain, the so-called Enemy Belligerent Interrogation, Detention, and Prosecution Act, which is probably, Greenwald writes, the single most extremist, tyrannical, and dangerous bill introduced in the U.S. Senate in the past several decades, far beyond the horrific Habeas Abolishing Military Commissions Act. It would literally empower the president to imprison anyone he wants at his sole discretion by simply decreeing them to be a terrorist suspect, including American citizens arrested on U.S. soil. Lieberman and McCain. The bill requires that all such individuals be placed in military custody and explicitly says that they, quote, may be detained without criminal charges and without trial for the duration of hostilities against the United States or its coalition partners. In other words, a life sentence based on nothing. Nothing. The whole first 10 amendments to the Constitution, Lieberman and McCain just flushed down the nearest crapper. Gone! It's basically, Greenwald writes, a bill designed to formally authorize what the Bush administration did to American citizen Jose Padilla, or Padilla, or what was done to Japanese Americans during World War II, arrest them, imprison them for years in military custody with no charges. We just didn't learn, did we? We just didn't learn, no. Japanese Americans, hundreds of thousands of American citizens, locked up. All their rights taken away. When was it? 5 years ago? Was it four or five years ago when finally the Congress of the United States voted some little pissant compensation to families of American citizens who had everything taken from them, were put on trains and trucks and shipped out to desert encampments and left there for years? Oh, my God. Back to Lieberman. I'm sorry. This Democratic hero, Joe Lieberman, has spent decades posing serious threats to basic liberties, including free speech. It was Lieberman who, just a few weeks ago, publicly threatened and bullied all companies to terminate their relationship with WikiLeaks, despite its not ever being charged with, let alone convicted of, any crime. This was just a repeat of his censoring behavior 2 years earlier when he successfully demanded that YouTube remove videos he disliked. causing the New York Times to editorialize, quote, "It is profoundly disturbing that an influential senator would even consider telling a media company to shut down constitutionally protected speech." Whoa, New York Times, damn. That was just a firecracker up your ass, wasn't it, huh? Woohoo! And then there's the leading role, Greenwald points out, that Lieberman played in lending Democratic support to the whole litany of Bush-Cheney assaults on basic liberties. He defended the Bush interrogation program and even so-called waterboarding, you know, controlled drowning. He was one of only two Democrats to vote against banning controlled drowning. No, I don't know. I talked it over with Hadassah, and she said, you know, what difference does it make? Let them do it already, right? He led the way, along with his close friend John McCain and Lindsey Graham, in enacting the Military Commissions Act, which explicitly denied all detainees the right to contest their detention in a court of law, a measure so repressive that the Supreme Court struck it down as unconstitutional, citing Alexander Hamilton's warning that, quote, "the practice of arbitrary imprisonment in all ages is the favorite and most formidable instruments of tyranny," end quote. But old Joe has no problem with tyranny, apparently. McCain never did. McCain is just out of his goddamn mind. He's still talking to his Vietnamese interrogators. And Lindsey Graham? Oh, don't go there, Mike. Once the court reestablished the habeas right, which Lieberman and his comrades snuffed out, it turned out, as federal courts found, that there was no credible evidence to justify the detention of a huge percentage of the detainees at Guantanamo. Innocent people who would have been imprisoned indefinitely to this day without a shred of due process if Lieberman had had his way. And now members of the House and the Senate, Democrat and Republican, are lining up to praise him, to say good things about old Joe. And Glenn says, but the blood on Joe Lieberman's hands is accounted for by far more than support for the Iraq War. He's long been one of Washington's most indiscriminate, toxic, and deceitful supporters of aggressive war generally, even as the two wars he cheered on were spiraling out of control. He was repeatedly urging new American attacks against Iran, Syria, Yemen. Lieberman, and this doesn't need to be pointed out, never served in the military, nor have any of his children. Lieberman devoted his entire career to attempting to send other Americans' children to fight war after war after war. In sum, as the Philadelphia Inquirer's Will Bunch put it when examining the muddled history of Lieberman's opposition to the war in Vietnam, quote, "the only war he ever opposed was the only war he actually might have had to fight in," end quote. But of course, being a relentless warmonger, Glenn Greenwald concludes, while cowardly hiding yourself and your family far away from the wars you cheer on is not remotely inconsistent with being a man of decency and conscience. As Republican, or I should say conservative, David Brooks and his many Beltway admirers will be the first to tell you. Where do they get these people? Hey, I've got a piece of sound for you coming back of Michelle Bachmann that, I don't know, it may sound to you like blasphemy or like Michelle trying to hook up.
get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Now, I know, you know, for some reason, I haven't been able to figure this out. What was the woman from Delaware? Christine, was it Christina something? Christina Donaldson? The one that said, I'm not a witch, you know, she was not. She was just this screaming, hand-raising Christian fundamentalist. Then you have Bachman, another Christian fundamentalist. Then you have Palin, another one. What is with these women? I think it's something sexual. I really do. I think these Christian fundamentalist women, the rapture-ready types, they have a whole different concept of a divine being from what was intended. I think they see God or Jesus as this divine phallus of some sort, just this huge God that is, you know, looking down at them with lust in his heart, you know. And why do I think that? Am I being blasphemous? Well, it's impossible for me to be blasphemous. But I read these rapture-ready websites. Dear God, so to speak. I mean, some of these women are just hot to jump in bed with God or Jesus or somebody. Here's Michelle Bachman talking about that very topic.
And I want to give testimony. She'll be hearing today, because he'll start out talking to you about how God doesn't want us to be lukewarm. Amen? He says, be hot or cold. Can you imagine? He would tell the world to be cold before being lukewarm. Imagine that. Well, when God gave me his calling, when I received Jesus when I was 16, the one thing that I knew that I knew that I knew is the difference between not knowing him, being cold, and being hot. And, you know, today if you watch TV, a lot of times you'll see young people on TV and they'll say, she's hot. Or they'll say, he's hot. And what are they talking about? They're talking about the outward, about how someone looks on the outside. What does God say when he looks at you or when he looks at me? He wants to say, she's hot. He's hot. Because we are hot for him on the inside. Amen? I'll tell you one thing. Just from experience, I'm 50 years old. I came to know him when I was 16. For 34 years, I've been hot. And you want to be hot. Because when you are hot for Jesus Christ, there is nothing that is like that life. It is the most exciting life when you are praying in the Spirit, when you are meditating on his word, when you are fellowshipping with like hot believers. He turns your life around. And it isn't just for you. It's for the world. He changes the world through hot people.
Damn. White hot. Man. Where is my fan? Ooh, hold on just a second here while I fan myself. She was in a church. Amen. Amen. Can I get an amen? Oh, Lord. Hold on just a minute. Woo! Hot. Damn. I don't know. Now, there's a term for for people that, you know, Michelle reminds me a little bit, maybe, I don't know, just from some of the stuff I've read about Mary. You know, the one that traveled across the desert on the donkey with Joseph, Mary. And she wasn't married or anything, but she turned up pregnant. And she had to tell Joseph something quick, right? What's this?
Ah! Well, That was hot for God.
Oh, I see. Okay. So here's Michelle Bachmann all these years later. Man, I don't know. There's just something something bizarre about all this. I can't quite put... Well, I better not say that. I was going to say can't quite put my finger on it, but I better not say that. There's something there, isn't there? And I mean, the way... I mean, Michelle is not kidding, man. Woo! And that's a YouTube video. And when you look at the video... She's got that locomotion happening. I mean, she does. And the people in the pews start to join in with her. And it's like, oh, my God, is this, where are we here? Is this a church or is this one of those places you hear about in New York where, oh, we'll be back.
It is the most exciting life when you are praying in the Spirit, when you are meditating on His Word, when you are fellowshipping with life-taught believers in the church of the world. He wants to say, she's hot. He's hot. Because we are hot for Him.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour here on the Malloy program. We got an email here from Kathy in Maine. Subject line, isn't it ironic? Kathy writes, as a long ago English major in college, I have a learned and abiding love of irony. Continually, however, the irony in the news here, there, and everywhere is changing from a lustrous shine to an absolute eye-stabbing glare. Some examples. The irony here. Maine's uncouth Governor LePage is beginning to name his State Department choices. His choice for the Department of Environmental Protection in the state is particularly troubling and has earned LePage an environmental score of zero from the Maine League of Conservation Voters. Darrell N. Brown is a LePage old crony. But worse than that, Brown is the owner of Maine Land Development Consultants. He, of course, is against any regulations on chemical use or hazardous waste generation and sees no reason to protect intertidal or wildlife areas. The irony of choosing this man to head the Department of Environmental Protection, although not unexpected, is very discouraging indeed. Oh, yeah. The irony there. Obama chooses Jeffrey, send the jobs overseas, Immelt, to chair the Council on Jobs and Competitiveness. Enough said. And let's not forget John Boehner, the weeper of the House, who, as a high-profile member of the right-wing Screw America machine, epitomizes irony with every sniffle and the fall of every crocodile tear. Or then there's Michelle Looney Tunes Bachmann delivering a rebuttal to Obama's State of the Union address to the nation. She gets a national platform to speak to 25% of the country. The Tea Party being a poster child of totally ridiculous irony in the political system, and the irony everywhere. Baby Doc Duvalier returns to Haiti to help
with Reconstruction. After fleeing 25 years ago, following his reign of terror and the killing of thousands of Haitians, this is a serious wow in the irony department. But to make it worse, old Bob Barr rises from the depths and is legally representing Baby Doc to bring his message of hope to the world. The irony just keeps piling on. In the song Ironic by Alanis Morissette, she sings that it's like 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife. Yes, irony is a beautiful thing in literature, poetry, and song, but when it constantly glares so brightly from every political stage around the globe, it begins to cause massive headaches. Unfortunately, sunglasses and Tylenol won't help one bit. Yeah, a little too ironic. Kathy in Maine. Yeah, the Duvalier thing. You know, here's a guy who, Baby Doc, who... I think, like, Idi Amin probably practiced some form of cannibalism just as a show, in a way of showing the terrorized people who lived in his country that he was capable of such a thing. His zombie-like guards, the Tantam Makut, who would have no problem skinning human beings alive in order to maintain Baby Doc's presidency, reported, if you want to trust the sources, that Baby Doc occasionally, for sport, would involve himself in a little harmless cannibalism. So Baby Doc is finally run out of the country, stealing everything that wasn't nailed down and some stuff that was, after torture, murder, and mayhem. And, of course, let's not forget his father's reign, Papa Doc, who actually had an army of the living dead, zombies, real zombies, that Baby Doc or Papa Doc ordered to rise up out of the cemeteries in Haiti and terrorize people. So, I mean, that's how crazy this family is. So, Baby Doc, Claude, Jean-Claude, is it Jean-Claude Duvalier returns. Now, the last elected president, Aristide, you know, he was elected by the people, but he wasn't the president that corporate America wanted. So, was it the Clinton administration that ran his ass out of his own country? Was it Clinton or was it Bush? I don't even, that really doesn't matter. Clinton, Bush, so. So, we see this little melodrama play out last week, right? Remember when Baby Doc, who is in his 60s now, I guess, and he looks like he just ate several small children. Every time I see him, his mouth is kind of crimped shut, and his cheeks are puffed out like a carnivorous chipmunk. And you know that inside those cheeks, there's got to be baby flesh. It's just like Dick Cheney. I mean, it's awful. We have been invaded by these creatures that look like humans, but they're not. So there's Baby Doc, right? And not a word, he just, you know, he's back in Haiti. He's come back. He's returned home. The country is in absolute chaos. And here comes Baby Doc, right? Now, let me ask you something. Do you suppose Baby Doc would have come back to Haiti without explicit permission and the rails being greased by both France and the United States? 3, 2, 1. That's right. No, of course not. Aristide, the last duly elected El Presidente, well, not El Presidente, Le Président. How do you say in French, the president, Catherine? Le Président, same thing. Aristide, of course, dare not show up because corporate America doesn't want him there. But here's the deal. If Baby Doc, you know, if they can reinvigorate the Tantam Makut to surround Baby Doc, those pictures of him being led out of that building with the cops, you know, all the police with, you know, very ominous appearances and, you know, the closed eyes and bulges under their suit coats. That was all for show. They're talking about maybe charging him with embezzlement. A guy who used to eat human flesh. A guy who tortured God knows how many Haitians were tortured to death. But here's the deal. If Baby Doc can be reinstated as the president of Haiti or the prime minister or the leader or the dictator or whatever, corporate America has this enormous captive labor force. Can you imagine all the designer clothing that will be made just outside of Port-au-Prince? Can you imagine? Think of the shipping costs that will be eliminated. Why get all this stuff from Vietnam? I mean, really? Probably no way that you can set up automobile plants in Haiti, but think of all the clothing and sneakers. And didn't they used to make baseballs in Haiti? Isn't that where baseballs came from? But I can just see the gap and just corporate clothing, American monster after corporate clothing, American monster, just looking at Haiti and Baby Doc and thinking, yeah, we can control this lard ass. All we have, just like Limbaugh, we'll just pump money into him and he will do whatever we tell him to do. And then, of course, the liberals will all shut the hell up because what are they going to say? No, no jobs to Haiti! Of course they won't say a thing. So the Haitians will make, pick a number, any number will do. $4 a day, 13 cents an hour, 70 bucks a month, I don't know, probably comparable to Bangladeshis. And what are they making now? They're all the way up to 80 bucks a month, I think, all the big American clothing manufacturers who have set up factories in Bangladesh. But that's so far away. I mean, it's way over there on the other side of India. But Haiti? Why, it's right, you know, down there. It's very close, Haiti is. I mean, it's just a capitalist paradise. You have all this dark-skinned labor just sitting there. What are they doing? They're living on traffic islands. They're drinking piss instead of water. They're feeding their children feces-contaminated crap. This is wonderful. And, of course, the liberals will get on board, right? Hey, we're going to open a factory down here. We're going to make Calvin Klein sweaters. We're going to pay you money. No more picking maggots out of mountains of rotting flesh. You know, now you'll be able to buy food and all kinds of stuff, right? Okay, Baby Doc. Baby Doc's back. Money, business, sweaters. Woohoo! Here's an article from the Telegraph of the UK regarding Jean-Claude Duvalier. It could be part of a plan to unlock $5.7 million held in Swiss bank accounts. You see, he has to prove that he's not wanted for criminal charges in order to get this money out of Swiss bank accounts. According to the Telegraph, Duvalier, who presided over a nightmarish period in Hawaiian history with his infamous Tonton Makut secret police force, flew into earthquake-ravaged country after 25 years in exile. It's been suggested that Valier wanted to demonstrate he was not wanted on criminal charges in his homeland, which would allow him access to access the millions in Switzerland. Well, yeah. It was thought Mr. Duvalier hoped to bypass the so-called Duvalier law, under which former rulers facing criminal investigations in their home nations can have funds returned to their country's present governments. So Duvalier hoped to bypass the law by returning to Haiti briefly to show that he was not the subject of a criminal inquiry. In a separate legal challenge, four Haitians filed criminal complaints against him alleging crimes against humanity, and a judge barred him from leaving the country. I think they should just, there is a food shortage down there, and human flesh, I've been told, tastes a lot like pig, pork, which is one of the reasons certain tribal peoples call human flesh long pig. I have an idea. Oh, I better not say it. Duvalier had been booked on a flight back to France on Thursday. Instead, he slipped out the back of his hotel in the capital, Port-au-Prince, and was driven to a private home on a mountain. And Bob Barr is right down there. You know, Barr would probably be pretty tasty, too. You know, long pig. His lawyers claim he only wants access to the money in Switzerland so he can donate it to earthquake relief efforts. Hey, Duvalier, I want you to meet Michelle Bachmann. You two would get along just great. The creator of the universe has been very busy the past 50 years watching out for Michelle. Oh, my God. It's just madness. It's like a cartoon. It's like a never-ending cartoon. Let's have a little violence in the cartoon. Have you got the thing from the televangelist play? Go ahead.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing. Change the pose. You get the ends.
Change the pose.
You've been using them?
You've been, yeah?
They believe in communism.
Yeah.
They believe and have called for revolution.
Yeah.
You're going to have to shoot them in the head.
Oh, no.
But warning, they may shoot you.
Oh, no, that's not fair. That's not fair. You got a thing with Bachmann there about Hot for God? Have you got that handy? That's just, there's something about that I just, I'm sorry, I just have to admit it. It's very sexual. It's very, it sounds like...
There she is.
Put it in his hands and said, you make the calling sure. I had no idea. At the same time, the Lord was speaking to my husband, and he showed my husband, he was repairing a fence on the farm where he worked, and the Lord showed him in a vision that he was supposed to marry me. And my husband said, well, I don't want to get married. I want to wait till I'm 27. I want to see the world. I want to have a great time in life. I don't want to marry this girl. But he put it on the shelf. And by faith, he followed the Lord. And over the next 2 years, the Lord began romantically to knit these two hearts together. Because we said yes to pursue his word and his perfect plan and his calling.
Oh.
And now 28 years later, I think we might have a chance. This thing might actually work out. And in the midst of that calling, he began to create in us and perfect in us what his plan was going to be.
Oh.
And during those dorm years when I was busy studying, the Lord put in my heart that if I would be diligent and if I would be steadfast, he would take me to law school. And I thought, law school? I have no interest in going to law school. But I put that in his hands and put it as a plan and pursued that. And eventually he did. He took me to law school.
Oh, he did.
And I went to the first Christian law school that there was in the United States down at Oral Roberts University, where they taught the law from a biblical worldview.
From a biblical worldview? So now let me get this right. Michelle is in a dorm somewhere, and the supreme creator of everything took her to law school? Oh, my God!
Michelle is in her room and she hears his voice and says, psh, come here. Why, I think that's the Lord. And then he that's right. I mean, the toxic narcissism of these people is just almost enough to drive someone like me completely insane. God paused in his creation and destruction of galaxies and eternities and took Michelle Bachman to law school so that her husband would marry her. Oh, and she stands there. Can I get an amen? Can I get an amen? And she's the one who tomorrow night will deliver part of the rebuttal to the communist, socialist, fascist, un-American, Kenyan Muslim. Oi. Oi. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. Please keep it lit. I choose.